You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 17 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Johannesburg, South Africa, on the MoneyWeb Now show today. Travis Robson, markets after we took a day off. Looks like maybe April was the worst of the worst, but numbers are still bleak. Mia Kruger, renewable energy infrastructure. She dropped it in at the end of our chat with her last week. We got her back. Let's dig into that as an investment space to look into. And then Charles Savage from Purple Group, more better known perhaps Easy Equities, surging new investment account signups. How do we get those new entrants to stay as markets, which they will do at some point, get wobbly again? Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb, government expected to support SAA restructured until March 2024. And Business Day, state to fork out $26 billion for that new SAA. Morning markets, we missed a day, of course. We were having Youth Day yesterday, but the S&P yesterday up 1.9, NASDAQ 1.8 up. Futures a little red this morning. Asia mixed, Sydney plus 0.2, Tokyo down 0.7. Commodities all red, oil under pressure, but they'd rallied yesterday, so we're kind of back where we were on Monday. The ZAR 17.19 against the US dollar, and top 40 opening call about 0.4% red.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Travis Robson. He's co-head IG Markets South Africa. It's me. Travis, morning. Thanks for your time. News coming out of the U.S. yesterday from President Trump. Reports of U.S. proposing a $1 trillion infrastructure spend. I mean, a couple of thoughts on it. Firstly, they can probably afford it, richest company in the world. But when they talk numbers and come with their sort of rescue plans, the numbers are absolutely ginormous and staggeringly large. Infrastructure, a good place to perhaps put some of that cash to get an economy working, get an economy growing.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, definitely strange. I saw the news announcement and it, like you say, throwing a massive amount of money down a pipe that I think needs even more than that. I mean, as you know, U.S. economy has contracted as much as 6.5% in 2020. The GDP of the U.S. shows a massive contraction, total of 20.4%, you know, worse than forecasted, which is around 18%. So it's doom and gloom. The numbers aren't looking good, but I think this market is just rallying on a knee-jerk reaction. We saw Monday that the Federal Reserve announced that it would start buying corporate debt issued by individual firms. That gave the market a lift. And then you had Trump administration considering this trillion dollars on infrastructure, which is, like you say, a massive amount. And then you had, surprisingly, April retail sales numbers coming out of the U.S. And really, really big jump in those numbers compared to what analysts were expecting. And, you know, that just showed that, you know, the economy is possibly not as bad as everybody thought. And then also following that, you had announcements coming out of the U.K. that there's a possibility of some sort of preventative measure for the virus. So it's very, very strange. Didn't expect the market to move as quickly as that. And I think the market is just strange at the moment. I mean, it's just completely gone against, you know, was shrugged off reports of cases of virus increase in the U.S., in the U.K. and the U.S. Yeah. And also there's been stricter measures in China to clamp down a fresh outbreak. But yet the U.S. market up, as you mentioned, S&P up 2%. It's pretty crazy.
You mentioned a strange market, and I, if I recall correctly, you were around in the last crisis, 08-09. You're not that much of a youngster.
No, I was in the UK, so definitely around.
Okay, so you were right in the heart of it, and back then it kind of made sense, right? We saw the news; it was bleak. We saw the markets; they were bleak. I suppose the difference, perhaps, this time, because the news is bleak, the markets are not bleak. It really is just the numbers. I mean, $1 trillion. I mean, that is a staggering amount. I appreciate it's a big economy. You mentioned the Federal Reserve and, you know, not just buying U.S. sovereign, but now moving down to corporate debt at the same time. It's those numbers that are being thrown around to stimulate it. But there's no earnings underpinned it. The Federal Reserve is going to have to keep it this for a number of years while we wait for those earnings to kind of catch up with where share prices are.
You know, in my heart of hearts, I just don't see it. I just think this market's a bit of a roller coaster, and it's trading on knee-jerk reaction. I think we must remember that Trump's going into election, re-election in November. He's going to start pushing this market as much as possible, even if it's on fake or false news. And I just can't see, looking at, as I mentioned earlier, the U.S. economy contraction, the GDP numbers, I think you mentioned exactly right. The Fed is going to have to keep lending rates on hold, but look at continuing to accommodate monetary stance for the foreseeable future to try to support any form of economic growth. And I just, in the short term, I don't see it. I think the numbers don't speak for them, but yet we're seeing a bit of a rally.
Yeah, and turning to our local market, the IG indicative price for the SA 40 looking a little weaker this morning. We might have missed the day, but it also looks like we're going to miss perhaps some of that rally. It might rally during the course of the day, but we're not going to sort of catch up that missed day, which does happen from time to time when we take a day off for a public holiday.
Yeah, well, IG's, you know, we run a 24-hour market on our SF40, and I think we're the only firm that does it. So we run a offer the US, and we get able to price it off other markets. So it is a really good reflection of the market, and we will see, I think, a knee-jerk reaction in our SF40 this morning, as it follows the, you know, Asian markets are trading up, also following the US. So we expect that counter to turn, and we expect we see more buyers coming in for the short-term rally. But I think key for South Africa today would be our CPI data coming out later today. And also our retail sales year on year are coming out today as well. But I don't expect it to be a long push in our market. I just think it's a knee-jerk reaction following Asia, and also Asia following the US.
Yeah, and those retail sales are undoubtedly going to be grim. The question is, how grim? That's Travis Robson, co-head IG Markets South Africa. Thank you for your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mia Kruger, Director of Kruger International. Mia, appreciate your time. We were chatting last week, right at the end of the call. You mentioned renewable energy infrastructure as an investment, and I thought I got to get you back and talk more about that. It piqued my interest from a dozen different directions. To kick off, I assume this is offshore, not local. To mum, I think we've only maybe got one sort of quasi-renewable energy. You're looking, I imagine, maybe Western Europe, North America for these investments.
Good morning, Simon. You're right. I mean, that's one of the issues we sit with locally, is that it's such an interesting and urgent, I think, investment area and an additional sector that should be added to portfolios. But there aren't many entry points, and that's the big problem that we sit with here. We all know about, you know, the Paris Agreement, the fact that we need to stay under the 2 degrees increase in temperature. And that actually means that the investment into renewable energy infrastructure should be 6 times larger at this stage than it currently is per annum to get there by 2050. Now, that is a massive investment amount. So besides the fact that we think it's a great investment area for returns, we also think it's very necessary for everyone to participate in reaching that goal. Excuse me. And you said, you know, there aren't many local investments, and that's why we are actually doing a lot of work on the local side to include a local investment into our funds. There's quite a lot of work on that, and I can't disclose too much of it because the deal hasn't been finalized in completion. But there are many opportunities in South Africa that are available to larger investors. It won't be easy for retail investors to get their hands on a direct investment in any renewable energy if they aren't part of a massive diversified sort of investment. And that's the only way that I think would be possible, really, to diversify your portfolio through the investment of, for instance, a collective or so on that has exposure to that. So we are working on that. we know that locally as well as globally, the fact that the production of energy through wind farms, through solar farms, are actually much cheaper now than doing it the old way, as we in South Africa seem to want to stick to. So there are so many opportunities here for investors to start looking at, but it is only available on a large scale. On the global side, Brookfield's infrastructure company is definitely one that's worth mentioning. That's definitely one that popped sort of on our radars. It was one of the first ones that we started looking at, and that's a good inclusion for very broad-based investment. They invest globally. They are quite diversified over various renewable infrastructure spend or investments that they've got exposure to, and they invest in North America, as you say, South America, Europe, and Asia, but no investment in Africa. And that's actually where we really want to sort of focus our attention to see if we can start inclusion of these projects within our funds and to make it accessible to investors in that way.
You mentioned upfront, I mean, obviously part of this is just a simple, good old fashioned, let's try and save our planet. It's the only one we have. But the other point is that the investment profile, I mean, certainly when I've dug around some of the local ones, you get offtake agreements. In other words, you've got a commitment from a utility to take the energy for in some cases, as long as 2 or 3 decades. We get as an investment, almost a blend of property and utility offering lower volatility, higher yield. Is that a fair comment?
That's absolutely spot on. That's one of the big benefits that infrastructure investment really has in a portfolio is the long-term stability that it offers in terms of the income stream. Mm-hmm. The contracts that these energy providers enter into with Eskom at this stage, and then obviously, hopefully, very soon in future with some of the municipalities or companies directly, are very long-standing contracts. Like you say, they're decades long and they are all inflation linked. So these are actually assets that return real returns over time. So they're all linked to inflation. So if inflation obviously low like now, it won't be the highest mm-hmm. returns. But the fact is it actually protects you on a real basis over time in terms of your income stream. And that diversification in a portfolio brings a lot of stability. We've always, you know, looked at if I can say generally, as an investment industry, at property and listed property as a sort of vehicle to offer that. But we know in South Africa that there are many other issues that we sit with here, oversupply, and not even to say what's been happening to that sector now. You know, so the consumer is, or that sector is very exposed to the consumer at this in South Africa, and that actually makes it quite unstable, where the longer-term contracts, like you say, decade-long contracts that's actually entered into with governments and with large companies, do offer more stability, we think, in a portfolio.
We'll leave that there. Mia Kruger, Director at Kruger International. Energy infrastructure as an investment. I like this idea. I think we're going to do some more digging. And when Mia gets her local stuff off the ground, we'll get her back on. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Charles Savage, he's CEO of Purple Capital, but more Purple Group, or the more better known perhaps, is also CEO of Easy Equities. Charles, morning, appreciate the time. Anecdotal evidence from everyone I speak to in the industry, locally and globally, is massive surge in accounts as those markets were collapsing. I assume you saw the same at Easy Equities and perhaps even to a degree at your trading division, GT247.
Hello, Simon, and nice to be on. Yeah, I mean, it's been an unbelievable ride from February. I mean, we put our half-year results out of February, and in them I said we sort of reached our tipping point. And then, you know, March came around, and COVID came around, and then it's just gone crazy. I mean, we're opening, on average, about 1,500 to 2,000 new accounts a day.
Wow.
And, you know, to put some context to that number, in February, we were was a record month for us, and we opened 12,000 accounts in February for the whole month. So it's been amazing. It's been tough to keep up with it, and then importantly to try and understand it and see what the drivers to make it sustainable might be.
Yeah, I want to come to that sustainability in a moment. Robintrack.net is a website which you can track what the Robinhood investors are buying. And they're buying the good old-fashioned VOOs and Berkshire Hathaways and the like. They've also been buying some crazies, such as bankrupt Hertz and the like. Part of the Sasol run, I suspect, was the Americans buying the Sasol ADRs. What's been the buying trend in South Africa? Certainly, we don't have a bankrupt Hertz to buy. What have your clients been buying? Has it been broad? Has it been focused into ETFs? Or has it all been jumping on the Sasol bandwagon?
So about 50% of the volumes remain in ETFs. So that's encouraging. And that's that's come off a base of 5 years ago where retail was only sitting in about 5% of ETFs. So that trend continues to strengthen. And there is a bias towards international ETFs now. And you can just understand that that's where the returns have been. So that's and the brands are there as well. So people want to own those stocks. And then locally, a lot of volume in Sasol. I mean, we've done over, as a retail broker, we've done over R1 billion in Sasol over the last couple of months. Average entry price is around 55. And, that's obviously looks like a great entry price when the stock's sitting at 140. But, the effect of that steep price appreciation is that you've turned investors into traders. Anyone who gets 100% return in a short period of time is going to question whether if they're still in it for the long term. So we've seen a lot of volume in Sasol, and that's also flown over into some of the other depressed stocks like Sorgo Holdings. You see quite a lot of volume in that. When Capitec pulled back, there was a lot of volume in Capitec. So these investors are looking for opportunities where there's bad news. When stocks are pulling back 20, 30%, they're seeing it as an opportunity to get a good entry price. And that, I must say, is the first time I've ever seen that. 2008, you didn't see that. Everyone was looking for a bottom and were waiting and invariably missed the bottom on 2008. In this case, I never bought anything on the way down. Sort of ran away from the market. This is the first time I've seen retail investors seeing buying opportunities in stocks that are going down and going down fast, and they've been paid handsomely for the risk that they're taking. So it's something new for us, and I can only put it down to the fact that one, access to data and access to information has now been democratized, and perhaps in 2008 that wasn't the case. Yeah. The smartphone has certainly changed the game. And the other thing that is different from any other time that I've been involved is that the average age of our investors is 33, and that is significantly different from what I've experienced before, where the average age of investors was closer to 55. So, with lower age comes higher risk, and I think that's the first time I've ever seen retail investors with such a high risk appetite holding the capital and therefore prepare to take the risk.
And as you say, they are being rewarded, which is great. You want that, of course, makes them a bit of traders. But if they're buying a lot of ETFs, they've got that underpinning. I suppose the real test is going to come in the next market wobble. And that might not even be this year, the way the Fed is pumping money into it. But I suppose that's going to be, how do they respond when their Sasols or Sorgos go down or when their ETFs go down? And that really is something which Easy Equity, I imagine, is looking at education, helping them understand the long-term focus on markets, even if you can and have managed to make a quick buck on some of the holdings.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, it's something that you're passionately involved in. And the journey in understanding investing, the amount of education that gets done by the media, by people like you, is significant. And I don't believe we fully appreciate the role that the media have played in educating this generation. So these guys don't need to be taught about the fact that markets are going to go down and they're going to lose money. And you've got to remember that also Easy's been around almost 6 years now, and that has been the worst 6 years for South African investors in living memory. So these guys have got quite a lot of resilience. I mean, they've seen returns in US, but they've seen no local returns. And in fact, when they look at their South African stock portfolios, most of them are down 15, 20% over the period they've been invested. So they've built up a resilience. Those that have arrived now that bought into this extreme volatility are learning lessons fast. But the key is engagement and education. And I don't think we fully appreciate just how much of that is being done by people like yourselves and other media platforms. So I think this generation are ready for what's going to come. And I think the difference is that education and understanding around financial advice and investments and long-term horizons and managing expectations is being done and being democratized.
But I love your point. Perhaps the last 6 years, it wasn't a fun 6 years, but if it built up resilience, it was worth every cent of that 6 years. Charles Savage, CEO, Purple Capital, and of course, Easy Equities, really appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. You find us live every morning, 6:30 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za and the MoneyWeb app, podcast from 7. Chat to us on Facebook, on Twitter, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My guests, my producer, Cordora, and sound engineer, Eddie. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.